Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. First, I'd like to thank Dwarkadish Prabhu for his very kind introduction. And actually, but the truth of the matter is, I'm here for all of your association. And you are also very bright, shining jewels. And I've come to benefit from the association of all of you. And therefore, I need your blessings if I'm to say anything of any relevance. And therefore, I kindly ask you that you please bless me that I may be able to say something today that will be pleasing to Srila Prabhupada and relevant to all of you as well in your spiritual life. Also, Dwarkadish Prabhu, I mean, he's kind and very gracious, magnanimous, but my participation in the preaching of the former Soviet Union was more as a witness than anything else. The seeds had already been planted by Srila Prabhupada, and I just came to witness his glory in the former Soviet Union. And Prabhupada's books had already stirred a revolution in the hearts of the residents of that God-forsaken place. And by the time I landed there, the revolution was already well underway. And when I appeared, although it was during communist times, and although there were risks involved, it was more, as I oftentimes tell devotees, that I felt like their sincerity for hearing about Krishna was so strong and so powerful that Krishna was reciprocating with their desires, and I somehow caught in the crossfire. I just happened to be there. And as credit is concerned, it's really, I witnessed transformation of thousands of lives by coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada's books. And I could tell many stories as evidence of that, but I think I've told them in the past. But I, just to clarify, I thought I should establish a historical account in the correct way by making it clear that it was Prabhupada who planted the seed of Krishna consciousness and is currently harvesting the fruits as well. And his books are still being distributed so profusely, and people's hearts are melting for prema bhakti. And somehow, Srila Prabhupada has kindly allowed me to come and to witness his glory in that, as I said, previously God-forsaken place. But although it was previously God-forsaken, I can firmly establish now that Krishna has certainly manifested his presence there in a very strong and powerful way. And the course will never be able to be changed as far as I can see. Prabhupada's desire has already been being fulfilled. In fact, recently I was reading one verse, wonderful verse in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the 10th canto, the prayers of the demigods. And Srila Prabhupada rendered the translation in a very beautiful poetic way, as he oftentimes does, being the great kavi that he is. And let me see if I can remember it. Is the O Lord, what is it? Lord, you are, like the more illuminating than the sun. He says, you are always ready to fill the desires of your devotees because you are a wish-fulfilling desire tree, Vancha Kalpaturu. When the great achayas who fully take shelter under your lotus feet cross over the fierce ocean of material existence, by taking form of shelter in your lotus feet, they leave on this earth the method by which they cross. And because you are very merciful to your other devotees, you accept their method in order to help them. Right? I think it's close, something to that effect. Which is, I think an apt verse to describe what Srila Prabhupada left. In other words, the prayer is saying that the Lord is always ready to fulfill the desires of his devotees, his pure devotees. And when the acharyas, I think Prabhupada actually used the word, when the acharyas cross over the ocean, they fully take shelter of your lotus feet in order to cross over the fierce ocean of material existence. Therefore, the Lord is ready to accept the method by which they cross. Not only accept their method that they crossed, but he accepts that method so that those who are still here can follow that method. Mahajano yena kata sapanta. Or in other words, they crossed the ocean, and not only did they cross the ocean by their method of crossing, but they leave behind the boat for everyone else to cross into. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada is, in his commentary to that verse, he writes how it is the duty of the acharya to leave behind, and he gave the example of Rupa Goswami. He says, just as Rupa Goswami has left behind many books, transcendental literatures for the enlightenment of human society. So in the same way, he says, it is the duty of the acharyas to leave behind transcendental literatures. And he also says, not only leaving behind transcendental literatures, but he quotes, I think Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in the commentary of that verse that not only are there literatures left behind, but they leave behind the institution, which is built around those literatures. And they leave it behind for the benefit of those who can cross in the same way that they crossed. In other words, Srila Prabhupada crossed the ocean of material nescience because of his having firmly taken shelter under the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord. And the Lord, who is like that wish-fulfilling desire tree, was very eager to fulfill his whatever desires he has. And as we know, Prabhupada's desires were to satisfy the order of his spiritual master. And his desire, as he himself wrote about on this journey across the ocean, while still on board the Jaladuta, was that somehow or other he prayed to Krishna to deliver those who would hear his message. Prabhupada, being very transparent and pure, presenting himself in a way that I can't possibly do it. What can my words accomplish? Only you can deliver them. Therefore I pray, let your words, as spoken in Srimad Bhagavatam, let your words be heard. Let them understand your message. And you deliver them. I can't do that. These are Prabhupada's words, his prayers, intense meditation, his desires. His desires was completely filled with complete compassion for those who were suffering. And therefore, because of such an intense prayer and desire to leave behind for our benefit the method which he crossed, which was by a complete overwhelming display of compassion for the fallen souls, he left us behind his mission to carry out and to build it on the most important foundation, which has been accepted by the Supreme Lord himself, was on the foundation of his transcendental books, his commentaries, his realizations, his personal ecstasies, and his sincere desire to make Krishna consciousness accessible. That is one of the duties of the Acharya, is that there was a prayer by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita where he glorifies Lord Chaitanya, who is an ocean of transcendental mercy. He says, although the subject of bhakti is very difficult to understand, nonetheless, he glorifies Lord Chaitanya for being that ocean of transcendental mercy because he made it so easily accessible to the people in the age of Kali Yuga. How did Lord Chaitanya make it so easily accessible? He made it so easily accessible because he was a full manifestation of ecstatic love of Radha and Krishna. And because he manifested such unalloyed love, he manifested manmana bhava mad bhakto in its perfectional state of always being absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, manmana bhava mad bhakto madhyaji mam namaskaru, to always think of me, worship me, offer your obeisances unto me, surely you will come to me. And Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also explains in his commentaries that in the following verse where Krishna says, Sarvadhamam parityajam amikam saranam vraja, where he says, abandon all varieties of religion and completely surrender unto me, he says that all the components of that surrender were in the previous verse, manmana bhava madbhakto. All the components of complete, total surrender to the Lord were there, and to always think of Krishna. And because Lord Chaitanya was the embodiment of the combination of Radha and Krishna, and he was in the mood of the topmost devotee of the Supreme Lord, Srimati Radharani, therefore he has made Krishna consciousness so accessible to everyone, because he displayed by his example what is pure, unalloyed devotional service. That is how to make Krishna consciousness accessible. And that's how Srila Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness accessible. Sometimes we think making it accessible means packaging it in a way that, you know, can make it look attractive to others. But the best package is giving Krishna, because he's all attractive. And therefore, those who are absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, those who are always speaking about Krishna, those whose words are always glorifying Krishna, those whose tongue is always decorated with Krishna's holy name, they're making Krishna accessible. They're making Krishna accessible because people can see, oh, there's Krishna. Krishna said, Naham tishtami vaikunte yogi nam hidi yeshuva, tatra tishtami narada yatra gayanti madbhakta. He said, oh Narada, I am not found in the Vaikuntha planets. No, you'll find me in the hearts of yogis. But if you want to know where I am, go to that place where my devotees are always chanting my glories. That's where you'll find me. That's how Srila Prabhupada made Krishna consciousness accessible. Everywhere he went, he impregnated Krishna consciousness into the hearts, not only by his words, but by his presence, just by seeing him. And not only that, he was so kind that he left behind the method by which he crossed this fierce ocean of material existence, by leaving himself in his books. And therefore, people come in contact with his books and they think, this is Krishna. Their lives are transformed. Their lives have changed. They want Krishna. Of course, it is our duty to see, to make sure that when they read in the books, that they see that there's an example to correspond for what they've read. That is our duty. We should have to make sure that Prabhupada, he set the bar in the proper place. This is what you have to expect to see. So, therefore, Prabhupada has left that mission for his followers also. He's left that behind, saying, yes, now you have to exemplify so that when people come in contact with me and come in contact with Krishna, and then they say, oh, I want to learn more. When they come in contact with his devotees, yes, everything's consistent. It all falls into place now. Prabhupada left behind that mission, left behind that boat for us to stay firmly secured in, and it's our method by which we can cross is to follow in his footsteps. I was thinking that I don't want to speak too long. I want to give chance to others to speak too. But I remember, it came to my mind, a story. I'm not sure if I told it here before. One time I was in Montreal, and I was visiting the temple, and I had to write a Vyasa Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada because the deadline was the next day to get it into the Vyasa Puja book. And I was sitting, and as oftentimes it is, when it comes time to write a Vyasa Puja offering, you find your mind like you're groping, you know, where to start. It's like, you know, standing on the shore of an ocean and not really sure how to make the first step, you know, in glorifying Srila Prabhupada. And I found myself sitting there just for some time, just kind of staring into the screen. And then I got a knock on the door, and the temple president came up to me and came into the room and said, Maharaj, he said, there's a man here. He's a guest. He's come to the temple, and there's nobody to talk to him. Would you take a few minutes to talk to him? He has some questions. And I was thinking, I've got this deadline. I've got to write my Vyasa Puja offering. I don't get it done. But he said, Maharaj, really, he just has a few questions. Don't worry about it, you know. So I could see, Krishna had somehow arranged for me to go and speak to him, this gentleman. So I went into the reception area. And there was a somewhat elderly man sitting there. And I introduced myself, and he introduced himself. He sat down and started talking. And he was the former commissioner of police from Montreal. And he said first thing he said, you know, I was here when Prabhupada came to Montreal. Can't remember what year it was. He says, I was on duty at the airport. And he said, when I saw Prabhupada, he said, everything changed. I was thinking right at that time that why don't I just follow him and become one of his followers? But I couldn't do it. I had a very important position. And he started and speaking about Prabhupada with very, very, I mean, I could see that this man's heart was touched by seeing Prabhupada. And then and he was commissioner of police, and all he did was saw Prabhupada at the airport. And then he said, you know, And he pulled out this Bhagavad Gita from his pocket. And he says, you see this Bhagavad Gita? Do you know how many times I've read it? I said, no. 32 times. He said, I never go anywhere without this Bhagavad Gita. He said that I read it again and again and again. Every time I read it, I regret that I didn't follow Prabhupada when I saw him. But my only solace is to go back and to read Bhagavad Gita again and again. He says, for instance, when my wife goes shopping, I take her to the mall, and she goes inside, and she says, you know, I may be a while. I said, my wife has a tendency to take a long time to shop. But he says, that's okay. I have my Bhagavad Gita. Take as long as you want. He said, matter of fact, she's shopping right now. But it was so close to the temple, I came by. I wanted to just see some devotees, and so immediately he went on and on. I said, this man doesn't have any questions for me. After that Bhagavad Gita, he started talking again about Prabhupada. He said, you know, my wife and I, every evening, we sit down and read Prabhupada Lilamrita. He said, my wife can't read Bhagavad Gita, but we read Prabhupada Lilamrita every night together. And he started telling me some of the things that he had read in Prabhupada Lilamrita about Srila Prabhupada. He went on for about 45 minutes, just glorifying Prabhupada. And of course, I just sat there. And no questions yet. And then he said, well, I think my wife's been waiting for me probably about a half hour. He said, I really got to go. It's been really nice talking to you. And thank you so much for coming and sharing your time with me. And then he also apologized. He said, forgive me for talking so much. I can't control myself. He said, and he went to the door. As I stood by the door, he started talking about Prabhupada again. He had his hand on the doorknob, and he started telling some Leela from Prabhupada Leelamrita about Prabhupada coming to America and how fortunate it was that Prabhupada had come to America. And he was telling the story. And then another 15 minutes passed while his hand was still on the doorknob. And then finally, he said goodbye and left. So I remember that I had 1 hour to write my offering because I had a lecture I had to go to. And I went back and I looked and I said, oh no, I have to go to lecture. I can't write my offering. But then somehow the next morning when I started to write my offering, and although it was going to be a little late, I realized that why Krishna took me away from the computer and gave me that 1 hour in front of this man, because he wrote the whole Vyasa Puja offering for me. Literally. Wrote the whole Vyasa Puja offering for me. It was like all I did was quoted him, the whole, I sent it in, and like devotees, I remember they were like, I was getting letters from God brothers, from all of Maharaj, thank you so much, such a wonderful offering. I didn't write the offering. I was getting a letter from God brothers, you know, who were like saying, yes, this is it. This is it. Prabhupada's still here. He's still here. Thank you so much. I said, yeah, I know he's still here. This man read Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita 32 times and loves Prabhupada. This is what Prabhupada left behind. He left this behind. This is what I witnessed when I went to the Soviet Union in communist times. I just sat there and witnessed, and I can tell stories about it. But I've done nothing except somehow bear witness to Prabhupada's glory. He's crossed the ocean, and he's left the boat. The boat. All we have to do is stay in the boat. That's all. Stay in the boat. Serve his mission. Meditate on his lotus feet. And everything that Prabhupada wanted for his disciples and grand disciples for generations to come will all become fully manifest by his desire, because Krishna always fulfills the desires of his devotees. We're very fortunate. Very fortunate. So we see some very wonderful things happening here also. And I'm very fortunate that the next place I go to, I will bear witness to what I am seeing here. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
Janatimirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuran Militamyena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Namam Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutare Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tinamne Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nivishesha Shunyavadi Paschacha Deshita Hare Krishna. Thank you, Radhanath Maharaj, and all the devotees for allowing me to be here. Yeah. I'm kind of like not used to speaking in public. But I thank Niranjan Maharaj, that beautiful story. And also this verse. I'm also like that. Srila Prabhupada is like a big ocean. And you just don't know where to start with his glories. He's full of glories. But when they were introducing Niranjan Maharaj, I was thinking of this verse, Prithvidyaji. Yadanagaradigram Sarvatma Prachura Hoybe Moranam, that Srila Prabhupada fulfilled the prophecy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that Krishna's holy name would be spread all over the world to every town and village. And then I was thinking how that was for me. I was in Hawaii, it was 1970, and God, I didn't know any of that. But all we knew was Srila Prabhupada, and we were so attracted to him. He was so wonderful to us. If somebody had told me at that time that I was getting involved with Hinduism, boy, I would have turned around and gone the other way. It never occurred to me. Because, for one thing, I had pretty much rejected any, you know, not God, but any type of organized religion. But when Srila Prabhupada came, that wasn't what how he presented Krishna consciousness. It was that you're not this body. You're the soul within the body. And the duty of the soul or the perfection of the soul is to love God. And it doesn't matter if you're a man or if you're a woman, if you're Chinese or Indian or American or anything. You could be anything. It doesn't matter if you're old or young. It doesn't matter if you're Muslim or Hindu or anything, or Christian. It doesn't matter. These things are external. But what is the nature of the soul? You're not this body. You're the soul within the body. And the nature of the soul is to love God. And who is God? Now that was what Prabhupada gave us. Who is God? Prabhupada, you know, we knew that Prabhupada knew who was God. He knew him. And he was able to give him to us. And so we had great faith that whatever Prabhupada said would take us to Krishna. Then they asked me if I wanted to become initiated. And I said no. The temple president said, why not? I said, well, yeah, I don't really feel that I'm qualified. He said, okay, go talk to my wife. So I went to talk to his wife. That was Govinda Dasi. And I explained to her I didn't feel that I was qualified to get initiated. And she said, what do you think you're getting initiated for? To become qualified. It's not like you come qualified to your guru. But you actually take initiation to become qualified. And I thought, oh yeah, right. And so I wrote that to Srila Prabhupada, my exchange with Govinda Dasi. And when Prabhupada accepted me, actually, Prabhupada was here in Bombay when he wrote the letter. It was May 28th. 71. And so anyway, Prabhupada said that I'm so happy that you've accepted the importance of initiation in making advancement in spiritual life. And by this initiation, you are linked to all the Vaishnavacharyas. And by their mercy, the path back to home, back to Godhead, becomes very easy. And for years, you know, I thought, wow, this is so wonderful. And, you know, now I'm linked to all the Vaishnavacharyas, and like Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami and Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and all the Vaishnavacharyas. And it was so wonderful to be accepted. And it took me years to understand that the Vaishnavacharyas are not only the Vaishnavacharyas of the past, but they're also the Vaishnavacharyas of the future and the present. And we're linked to all these Vaishnavacharyas. And by their mercy, the path back to home, back to Godhead, becomes very easy. And Niranjan Swami was talking about the boat. And it's one of my favorite parts. Like in Krishna book, it talks, this verse is given. And that talks about how the boat is there. And the boat will cross the ocean of material existence. And this ocean of material existence is very fearful. And it's very wild. And it's very formidable. But when you even approach this boat and to take shelter, what happens? The ocean of material existence becomes just like the hoof print, the water. This whole ocean is just like the water in the hoof print of a calf. when a calf steps on the ground and then the rain comes, the little fills up with water like that. This is the mercy of the Vaishnavacharyas, that they make this path back to home, back to Godhead, very easy, just like walking over the footprint of the calf. So I was thinking of that. And how Srila Prabhupada, it was his mercy that he made Krishna consciousness so easily accessible to all of us. I'm tempted to say that Srila Prabhupada democratized it, but actually it was always this way. But that there's this verse, Sarva Padi Vinirmuktam Tatparat Vena Nirmalam Rishikesha Rishikena Sevanam Bhakti Rajate. And I remember Prabhupada was very fond of this verse. It's from the Narad Sutras, Narad Pancharatra. But Rupa Goswami quotes it in the Bhakti Ryasamrita Sindhu. And it's one of the definitions of bhakti, right after Anyabhilashita Sunyami goes into this one. But so it's like this, that one, that, this is how I saw that Prabhupada was presenting it, that to serve Rishikesh, to serve the Lord of the senses with the senses, to serve the Supreme Lord, that one should be free from all upadis, sarva upadi, vinirmuktam. Upadis are the unwanted thing, the impediments, and all the impediments are gone. But Prabhupada emphasized that we serve the Lord of the senses with the senses. We chant Hare Krishna. We take prasadam. We engage in serving Krishna. And then all the upadis go away. And what are these upadis? These are the conceptions of age, of gender, of religion, basically that have to do with the body and the mind. But all these things go away. Prabhupada emphasized this again and again. Remember, we were in Iran. Prabhupada sent us to Iran to help open a center with a Chairishi. And Prabhupada came to Tehran. And he came twice, actually. But one of the things, Prabhupada was quoting this verse, and he was saying how there's no impediments to bhakti. And then he was giving the example that age is not an impediment. To be married or to be not married, it's no impediment. It's not an impediment to be a brahmachari. It's not an impediment to be a sannyasi. It's not an impediment to be a woman. These things are not impediments. And then he was saying, and he was giving examples of all this, and he was saying how Sanatana Goswami, because we were in Iran, which is a Muslim country, and how Sanatana Goswami was almost, I know in teachings of Lord Chaitanya, he says Rupa and Sanatana were like demi-Muslims. But Prabhupada was there, he's saying, he was like almost Muslim. He said, no, not almost, absolutely. He even ate with them. He said, and just see, Sanatana Goswami, we are all followers of Srila Sanatana Goswami Bhad. He said, look at Namacharya Haridas Thakur, born in a Muslim family. So that anyone can be a Vaishnava, anyone can serve Krishna. And so this was Prabhupada's universal understanding. And this is how he brought all of us to him. And this is how Srila Prabhupada with his you know, his magnanimous liberality, he was able to make us understand that actually we are all servants of Krishna, and that step by step we're becoming closer. And he was it was Srila Prabhupada's great gift to all of us that he was able to let us see this. And you know, if there's nothing, the little time that I was able to spend with Srila Prabhupada, and I was able to understand this, has, like, you know, I can't say, touched my heart, melted my heart. I have a very stone-like heart, but melted my heart for all time. And I owe my life to Srila Prabhupada and everything I can do to serve him. So thank you. And check out the congratulations.
Vishnupadaya Krishnapastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Itinamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharde Nevrse Sashunivari Pasitade Satane Omegana Tamandasya Ginaginasa Lakaya Chaksun Mitamdina Tasmai Shri Gurve Nama. Respected Radhana Swami, thank you for inviting us. I'm not a public speaker, and in my 40-odd years of being a devotee, this is the second time I have had to sit on a big seat. So please, and my memory isn't as quick as it was 40 years ago, so I'll tell you a few little stories that will show you a little flavor of Srila Prabhupada's love and humor and fatherhood, and how he, you know, we're coming from another tradition. You all are coming from the Hindu tradition. This is part of your family lineages. And we in the West, we just saw Srila Prabhupada. We heard the holy name, and it awakened, by a miracle, it awakened something in us. And Srila Prabhupada, by his love, his wisdom, and his guidance, actually gave us an amazing jewel that Swamiji spoke about. He gave us, I think the biggest gratitude I have to Srila Prabhupada is that he gave us a method for finding ourselves, for finding the divine within ourselves. And that method is held in the holy name, in the Nam, in Hare Krishna. And when we chant this name, this portable name we carry with us, we chant it on our breath, we hold it in our heart, and it is a transformational mantra. Mahaprabhu said in this age of Kali that the holy name is the way, the gateway, the easiest gateway to accept, to actually be immersed in divine love, in prema bhakti. If we can chant the holy name with awareness, with presence, hold it in our breath, welcome the holy name into our system and share the holy name, it is miraculous. And it is the portable gift. At the end of our lives, we only have the breath. If we can hold the name of Krishna on our breath, then we are promised that we'll enter into the divine realm of Krishna, of Krishna Loka. Srila Prabhupada told me once, he said, always remember Krishna. He said, never forget him. And he said, if you always remember Krishna, then this life is perfect and the next will be perfect and we will go back to Godhead. This is the essence that I have received. I know that there's wonderful books to actually bring us to this, but the essence, the homeopathic remedy is Harinam, is the name, is holding the name in our consciousness, bathing ourselves with the name. When we chant our japa, just hold the name on our breath. Allow it to course through your body. Allow it to project out into the world. Because this is our medicine. This will actually form our minds, form our consciousness to actually remember. It's not easy to remember. Our minds are going here and there. It says in the Gita, our minds are our best friend or our worst enemy. So how do we control the mind? In this day and age, in ancient times, they would do yoga, they would sit with the breath, they would try to make everything leave the mind. But Prabhupada told us, no, put Krishna in the mind, put the Naam in the mind, hold the Naam, because the Naam will transport us, the Naam is our medicine. And on that, and there's another story I'd like to share with you today of Srila Prabhupada. And this is Srila Prabhupada's teaching us about the importance of the Archavigraha, the importance of the deity, and our relationship, our service to the divine that actually is channeled through the worship of Krishna, that so by the grace of our Guru Maharaj and the grace of the Sampradaya comes to us in a form. You know, we are told in the Gita that Krishna is nirguna and saguna. He has form and he is without form. And in the early stages of our development, to have Krishna here in form, manifest as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is such a gift and a focus for us and a blessing. So Srila Prabhupada, he taught us deity worship. We didn't know anything. He taught us, you know, how to offer prasad, how to cook prasad, how to bathe, how to, you know, we had no understanding of this. Anyway, one day in Los Angeles, I served in Los Angeles from 1971, the end of 71 till 76. And I think it was about 74, Srila Prabhupada came to the temple. And every time, and in those days, New Dwarka, Los Angeles temple, was the biggest temple. I think we had 75 devotees. And there were 23 Brahmacharinis in one Brahmacharini room. And it was like, you know, it was, but we were young. It was rather austere. But anyway, Srila Prabhupada came and he saw the deities and he was standing in front of the deities and you could see he was absolutely seeing Krishna. He was like communing with Krishna. He was having a dialogue with Krishna. And I was doing the arti, because in those days women could be pujaris, you know, in the West. Anyway, and we were doing the chamra, because when we greeted, the incense would burn and the chamra would come, and Prabhupada, we were, and you could just see Prabhupada, and I looked and I just saw his eyes were you know, I kind of, by the corner of my eyes, I saw his eyes were absolutely glazed, and he was absolutely focused on and seeing Krishna, and just seeing him seeing Krishna just actually touched my heart, and it gave me so much faith that actually Krishna was there. It was, you know, that the deity was alive because our Guru Maharaj had invited Krishna to come. And because our Guru Maharaj had such humility and sincerity, he actually, the deity came by his grace, by his godly grace. And after Prabhupada moved on, and then after he went to give class, and I went to cook the fruit offering, or the breakfast offering, and then I got word in the kitchen, Srila Prabhupada wants to see you right now. And I went, oh my God, you know, what is the problem now? What have we done wrong, you know? Because when Prabhupada called, sometimes you were in for a little bit of, you know, oh, I would say kind, not chastisement, but, you know, a little wake-up call that there was room for development. There was room for development, yes. And so anyway, threw off the apron and ran upstairs, offered my obeisances. And entering Srila Prabhupada's room in Los Angeles, Prabhupada was sitting on his Vyasasana. I don't know if any of you had ever visited Srila Prabhupada's quarters in Los Angeles, but his asana had a window right behind it. And Prabhupada had just taken shower and he was just glowing, and there was a light coming in from the window behind, that because it was the morning sun was coming in, and Prabhupada just looked, he was actually luminous, he was effulgent, and I just came in and I could see that Srila Prabhupada wasn't just another human being, he was a divine being. And he called me forward and to sit down, and I came and sat down. And he said, "Who has dressed the deities?" Very firmly. And I kind of looked down and I said, "I have Srila Prabhupada." As if he was going to scold me for something or doing something wrong. And he said, "They're very beautiful. Krishna is very beautiful." And he said, "Thank you. Thank you very much." And I said, "Srila Prabhupada, I haven't done anything. I've only tried to please you." And he said, "Thank you." And he was looking, and it was like he was just acknowledging by his absolute kindness that we were trying in our simple, fumbling way to please him, because he was our gateway. He was our gateway to Krishna. And by pleasing him, by loving him, by serving him, he was opening a window. He was opening a door. He was giving us the ticket to the spiritual world. He was giving us the boat path. And he said, "Thank you very much." And then he said, "Go on as you are and teach others." He said, "As appropriate, teach others." He said, "This deity worship is very important for helping the new devotees, the neophytes, the new devotees to connect with Krishna, to connect with the divine, to have a focus for their service to the divine." And that he said, "Krishna reciprocates. So just carry on and do your service." Then he motioned to Shudhakirta to get his bag out, his money out. And he went in his money and he went through. And he took out $20. Well, in 1974, $20 was kind of a lot of money, you know. He took it. Yeah, like $100 now. He took out $20 and he handed it to me. "This is for Krishna. This is for the deities." So in that simple gesture, he was teaching us to give to God, to give to Krishna, to make an offering, to offer ourselves, to offer our wealth, and to offer our hearts. And I took it and I told Srila Prabhupada, we'll use it for the next outfit, you know. I'll make sure. And then he just said, thank you. And it was just like, I'll never forget his smile. And then he gave me one of his oceanic smiles. And when Prabhupada smiled, it was like the whole universe was open. You know, his smile encompassed all of us. And I just offered my obeisances. And I just ran out of the room thinking, $20 for the deities. What's Srila Prabhupada? And it was just, and you know, it was just like one of, because, you know, as in the early days, in the early days of our dearest god sister, Jamuna Devi, who I really want to honor here, who was one of my sister gurus in my development in Krishna consciousness, and one of the, and she has spoken here before, and sadly she's gone to join Krishna and along the way. So we just really give gratitude to our sisters and our god brothers who are actually have trained us and have, you know, put up with us in our endeavor to please. And anyway, I can. I only have a few stories of Krishna, of Prabhupada. But another story, and this is kind of a funny one, so if you want a little humor, I'll give you just a little humor of Srila Prabhupada. And I'm sorry if I get some of the details. I've put some of these stories on Yadubara's tape, so if a little bit of things are a little different, no worry, because of the memory. But the essence of it is the same. And I'll just share you a story of Srila Prabhupada that was very humorous and witty. Because Srila Prabhupada was very strong, and his books are serious, and the path is a noble path. You know, it's a serious path. But a serious path is human, too, because we're human beings. And there is a lovely story, and it's really, I'll share it with you. It was the day of my marriage in 1972, October. My marriage was arranged, which is the Hindu tradition. We're not used to that in the West, but I agreed. I had 24 hours to agree. I was given 24 hours, which is, you know, and then 7 days later I was married. So this was the way it was then. And I surrendered. I sat up all night. I prayed to Srila Prabhupada, is this what I'm supposed to be doing? And Srila Prabhupada, I just got, it'll be good for my spiritual life. And it's been a challenge, but it's been, it's made me the person I am today. So I have huge gratitude, you know, there's no problem. But it's been, a powerful journey. Anyway, it all started on the day I got married. We had a fire sacrifice, and Prabhupada wasn't feeling that well, so he didn't come to the wedding. But he invited us to the garden, and in Los Angeles he had the most divine garden that in the afternoon, if you were very fortunate and usually one of the senior men, you got to go to this garden. But I was, it was on my wedding day, so I was granted access. Srila Prabhupada invited us to come. At that time of in the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Srila Prabhupada was giving classes, he was in residence in Los Angeles, I think working on the Chaitanya Charitamritas. And anyway, in one class he was saying that a beautiful wife is an enemy to the husband. A Okay, you got it? The scene is set, right? So a beautiful wife is the enemy to the husband because she'll distract him from Krishna, right? Right? Okay. So I walk in the garden, dressed. Gopi dots as well, yes. We learnt about gopi dots. Big nose ring, sari, which my mother had bought. My mother had come. And tied together, and I had a plate, an offering for Srila Prabhupada, part of the wedding feast that I had done with the help of our dear god sister Nandarani, who, because I was quite new, you know, but I had to cook a feast. I had to make a bead bag in 1 week, make a bead bag, make a kurta, and cook a feast. That was my prerequisite for getting married in 1 week. I ticked all the boxes. I arrived at the door, and Srila Prabhupada, when we came into the garden, Prabhupada had his amazing smile again. And then he winked, and I thought, oh my God. He winked and he said, oh, she is beautiful. And I went, oh my God, an enemy already? And then, so I just was, you know, I went bright red, didn't I? I was 24 years old at the time in 1972, so you can do the math. And I just thought, oh, Srila Prabhupada, you have such humor. You know, I thought that here, you know, I was just, he said it with such affection. You know, he was just being playful, like a father. He was our father, you know, and he was just being playful. Anyway, I offered the food, and he just, and he took the drink. And, you know, when Srila Prabhupada, he'd pick up his silver glass, and he would, and he put, took it to his mouth like this, and closed his eyes, and his little fingers, you know, was up in the air. He took it, and then he savored it for a minute, and there was a pause, and then his eyes got big. And he said, she can cook. I thought, oh my God, I'm an enemy and I can cook. But then he had us sit right at his feet. And we gave him garland, and he just had to sit right there, right at his feet, like touching his feet. And he just kind of called us in, you know. And then the first thing he says, so what does your parents think of this Krishna consciousness? And I said, oh, my mother's come to the wedding. And then he just smiled, you know. Actually, my mother, I was just rang up my mother and said, I'm getting married next week. And she said, can I come? I was totally in the bubble. I was in the Krishna bubble. I'm getting married. Oh, by the way, I'm getting married, Mother. Can I come? So she came. She was the only one that sat on the chair at the... And I think I'm going to need a chair soon, too, because she was my age, actually, when I got married. Anyway, and then Prabhupada was just so affectionate, and he told me, because, you know, we didn't know each other, you know, my husband and I, we didn't know each other or anything, and he said to me, he said, you know, you are by service one becomes attached. He said, if Krishna is always in the center of all your relationships, these relationships become perfect. And they're a gateway to the divine. They're a gateway to Krishna. So keep Krishna in the center in all our relationships. You know, so that is just one little anecdote of Srila Prabhupada's humanity and his accepting us as his daughters and sons and his just making the philosophy of Krishna consciousness so accessible to whatever caste or creed or gender we are. We all are on a journey, and it's a personal journey with the divine. It's not a group realization, it's self-realization. And we become self-realized by following the path of the saints, by taking the association of those that are mad for Krishna, that dedicate their lives to their own personal sadhana and the world, you know, reaching out into the world. Mahaprabhu's mission was every town and village. And every town and village is a subtle, simple thing. It's done with humility, with gratitude, and with love. So I think I've spoken enough, but I just really want to thank you all and thank Radhanath Swami for inviting us and just encouraging each and every one of us, because we're all pilgrims on the path to divinity. We have Srila Prabhupada's map, and we are so fortunate to have that. So as we do our practice every day, as we chant our japa, as we do our service, just asking for grace, asking for the taste to move, the taste of Nam, the taste of Krishna's Nam, the taste of service to the devotees. Because by serving the devotees with humility and with affection and with purity, we actually will be granted, you know, prema bhakti. We'll be granted the ticket to the divine. So be really conscious with our daily sadhana. You know, when we chant our rounds, listen to the nam, hold it on the breath. When we do our puja, do it with consciousness. Do everything with mindfulness. Prabhupada was a perfectionist in being mindful in how we do our service. It's not automatic. Service can be automatic and we get into routines. Just pause a moment before we do it and just ask for the divine grace to empower us that we might be vehicles for our Gurudev's service, that we might be, you know, humble, simple servants, and we might be able to reach the goal together and individually. So Hare Krishna, thank you so much.
Hare Krishna. We have no words of gratitude to all three of you for sharing this most beautiful, intimate part of your life and your close association, Srila Prabhupada, with all of us here, junior devotees. Very, very grateful to for you, for your kindness. And we have amongst us, we're talking about jewels today. So another of Prabhupada's jewel has just arrived into this assembly of Vaishnavas. Let us take this time to very loudly welcome His Grace Kuladri Prabhu. Under Srila Prabhupada's divine guidance, for 15 long years, His Grace Kuladri Prabhu has given his life, his breath, his soul, everything he had to develop New Vrindavan. The best part of his years were given to New Vrindavan to develop it to Prabhupada's fulfillment, his desire. There was a BTC copy which once had Kuladi Prabhu's photograph on that, where he was performing a fire sacrifice. And Prabhupada said, "Who's this?" Someone said, "This is Kuladi Prabhu." He said, "Oh, this is Kuladri. He's the expert at everything." So, I think Radhan Maharaj and Kuladi Prabhu are very close friends for so many years, and I think I remember that they were also milking cows together in New Vrindavan. Is that right, Maharaj? So, he's a very intimate part of New Vrindavan community. Now he's his expertise has brought him to new heights. He's now the global compliance officer for ISKCON, working closely with the GBC. So we have a very highly qualified person, a dedicated person. So again, we welcome him loudly three times. Hariva.
Honestly, I don't know why I'm asked to speak, but I can. I was just thinking. I was looking at the temple this morning, and what a wonderful atmosphere, the beauty of this place. And I was reflecting on how back in the hills of West Virginia, saw one young man walking up the road, dirty, muddy road, long hair, somewhat disheveled, and that was Radhanath Swami. We call him the Bubba. I think he had just come back from Vrindavan, and you could tell he was just a humble, wonderful soul right away. But what probably most of you don't know is Maharaj is very strong also. Maharaj and I used to milk the cows together. Maharaj would walk up and down the muddy road a couple miles to sing to the deities in the evening. Actually, I think Maharaj was supposed to be our Kshatriya security guard at night. You may know the story. We were at one time, we were attacked by a motorcycle gang, and they came in and shot some devotees and knocked over the deities. So we wanted to have someone available all the time. And so somehow or other, Radhanath Swami was the full-time Pujari up in Vrindavan. And after being Pujari by himself, practically cooking and doing the artis, he would walk down the road, and at night he would stay up on the porch in front of the... Before we had the temple, we just had a small farmhouse or Radha Vrindavan Chandrawar. And Maharaj would sit on the porch and sing bhajans all night. So I don't know when he slept, but he was our Kshatriya guard, Radha Vrindavan Chandra. You know, you don't know why you're given the good fortune that you're given. Certainly when we grew up in America, we had no Brahmande Brahmate Kon Bhagwan Jeev Guru Krishna Kripai Bhai Bhakti. That Bhakti Lata Bij, the seed of devotion, I look at the culture of you all fortunate souls born in India, how you grow up, and I contrast how we grew up in the West with far more degraded lifestyle. I attended a fancy private school. Actually, one of my classmates is on the cabinet of President Obama. So it was a fancy school, well-heeled individuals, and then I had a full scholarship to the university. I was in medical pre-med. But I was miserable, actually. I was miserable. Until I heard and met Srila Prabhupada. So you're fortunate. And I was thinking this morning in Maharaj's class about thinking what we've achieved or how important we may be, but there's nothing I did that deserved that association. I certainly didn't do anything in my life to be given the seat of bhakti. I flew in last night, and a devotee kindly was driving me. We were riding together from the car, and he was asking very earnestly, "What, you know, most important thing? What can you give me? What is the most important thing you can give me?" And you could say so many things because our philosophy encompasses everything. And but I said, "You want to give so much of yourself that at the end of your life you don't regret. I could have done more. I should have done more." That is my regret, that I didn't deserve what I got and I didn't give everything I could. In the U.S., we have sports teams. I guess here in India you have something, what do they call, cricket or something? But in the U.S., you know, we have these very passionate sports, basketball and soccer and American football. And the coaches always say, you know, to the players, and the players say, "I left it on the field, coach." They say, "Leave it on the field. Give everything so when you walk off, you gave everything you could." So I always think I should have given more to Srila Prabhupada. I owed him a lot more than I gave. So it's a very simple thing, but it's an important idea. You don't want to regret your opportunity. Somehow or other, Srila Prabhupada was very kind to me. He allowed me to perform some personal services for him, and probably because I'm not so philosophically inclined. I mean, I look at the erudition in the room, the knowledge and the training, and you know, I can't compare to that type of quality of a Vaishnava. But Srila Prabhupada allowed me to cook for him. He allowed me to massage him. He allowed me to take care of him when he was sick. He allowed me to be with him when he was ready to depart the planet. I would be with Prabhupada. I remember here in Juhu, there's so many sweet stories, and then there's the bittersweet stories. Srila Prabhupada really don't know where to tough for me to talk about it. But when Srila Prabhupada was sick in Vrindavan, I believe it was 73, 74, before Krishna Balaram Temple was open, we all became very sick, and malaria, and Prabhupada became very sick, and I was lying next to him on the floor, and he would call out at night. And after seeing Prabhupada on the Vyasasana and reading his books and seeing him as the founder acharya of our Vaishnava Sampradaya, the founder acharya has a special meaning, extraordinary personality, empowered acharya. And but in that circumstance, Prabhupada became very childlike for me, and massaging him and rubbing powder on him and walking him to the bathroom. These things, I don't know how I was given that opportunity or what I did to deserve that. But that was his kindness. And So I was telling the story today that you see all the wonderful carving that's going here that was done. We found Rancho by Mystery in the Bulleshwar Market, the carver, and he's done so much of the carving around the world. And we've first asked him to carve the first Sringasan for Radha Vrindavan Chandra. And I was the president of Vrindavan, and we had to bring... Prabhupada was coming to Janmashtami in 74, and we had to get the Sringasan to Prabhupada. Well, I had to, and it was here and carved, but we had to, I had to find a way to smuggle it out because we hadn't paid for it with outside money. You know how the Reserve Bank, you have to give, show money coming in before you can export. Well, the devotees had donated from here, so we had to learn how to, I had to learn how to smuggle it out to get it in time for Prabhupada to see it. But in the meantime, I brought him the drawings and showed Prabhupada, this is what we're having done. And Prabhupada was smiling and liking, and I was showing him, we had the incarnations carved in, and Prabhupada was very pleased. And then he looked at me, and you know, I was thinking, I've figured a way to, we've designed this, and I figured a way to smuggle it out, and I'm the president of New Vrindavan. And then Prabhupada looked at me and said, how much did you pay? And I told him, and he said, you've paid too much. So, I was thinking I was pretty expert at everything, but not really. So, then we, Srila Prabhupada came, and we were still in the farmhouse at New Vrindavan, but we had expanded it. And so when the curtains opened and he saw Radha Vrindavan Chandra in their newly carved Sringhasan, he looked and he seemed very pleased. And when he came up and he studied them, and then he turned to me and he said, it was worth it. So I wasn't so expert, I guess, but I remember cooking for Prabhupada was always a great pleasure for me. And I don't know if how many of you saw in Juhu before the large temple and the construction, you know, Radha Rasa Bihari were in a little deity room in a pavilion. There was no temple and all of the apartment buildings, and Prabhupada had one of the apartments in the back. And he was leaving for Kumbh Mela the next morning on the train. And so I was there doing something, and came to spend time with Prabhupada. And Prabhupada asked me, he said, will you cook for us? We're taking the train to the Kumbh Mela, so please cook for us. And I was excited. And so he was speaking that evening. He was speaking with a number of businessmen, and you know how in Juhu the preaching goes on late at night. Giriraj Swami used to take me on these. We'd come in the middle of the night and speaking to businessmen. So it was getting into the evening, and I was sitting and listening, picking up a word or two because Prabhupada was speaking half in Hindi, and he turned to me and he said, "You are not cooking." And I said, well, Srila Prabhupada, you're leaving the next... I wanted to cook, make it fresh. I didn't want to cook too early. And he kind of nodded and went back to preaching. But I understood that he meant, start cooking. So I went into the kitchen, which at that time was right next to his room. Right next to where he was speaking. So I started cooking samosas and kachoris. And he was preaching. And it was late, again, I don't know, 11, 12, I don't know what time it was. And so they finished, and Prabhupada sent them away, and Prabhupada walked in towards his room, and he said, I want a taste. So I put together two or three samosas and a kachuri and some puffed rice and brought it into his room. And then I went back to cooking. And when you cook for Prabhupada and you bring him his meal, if you're a cook, then you start looking at your watch. And you want to, because if the bell rings too soon, then you know he hasn't eaten very much or he hasn't liked what he was given. So I was looking 5 minutes, 8 minutes. By 10 minutes, I was starting to dance in the kitchen. I had to cook for, you know, a Brahmananda Swami who could probably eat the whole bag of vinegar. And so I had to continue cooking for the rest of the party, but it was clear that Prabhupada was taking prasadam, and I was getting excited. So the bell rang, and I came in and paid obeisances, and as I looked up, I looked at the plate, and it was clear. And I looked at Prabhupada, and he was smiling, and he said, "One more samosa, please." I'm not very philosophically inclined. But when your spiritual master likes your samosas, you know, I've forgotten a lot of verses, but that... And Prabhupada said, you know, this is our standard. You should, this is our standard of cooking. And it reminded me, when we were at New Vrindavan, I remember when I first showed Radhana Swami how to make sandesh. And because whenever we would go be with Prabhupada, we would always bring him New Vrindavan prasadam. We'd always bring him gifts and New Vrindavan prasadam. And I said, "Maharaj, we, from the cow's milk, it would be very rich, and we'd turn the milk to curd, and then I would say, you have to knead it, and then add the sugar." And so, but Maharaj always would take things to a much finer degree. So when I just showed him, and then the next time when I saw him making the sandesh, you know, you knead it on the with your thumbs on the marble, and you make it smooth, and you make it smooth. So that's what I showed Maharaj. But when I watched Maharaj make it again, he kept kneading it and kneading it and kneading it. He turned the sandesh into something a lot different from what I had showed him. So whenever we would be with Prabhupada, we would always bring Radhana Swami sandesh, which Prabhupada appreciated very much, and the care in which, and the degree in which he, you know, the amount of love and expertise he put into making the sandesh always kind of exemplified how he would perform his devotional service, no matter what it was. I have one other short. There are a few stories, but this one seems to be a very popular one. When I would massage Prabhupada in Vrindavan, when he was not feeling well, we would be up a lot of the night massaging his fingers, pressure points, and just trying to make him feel better. And we'd be under the mosquito net together. Somehow or other, one mosquito got in under the net. So I went to grab it, and Prabhupada stopped me. And so I'm thinking, oh, even the mosquitoes in Vrindavan are special. You can't even kill a mosquito in Vrindavan. So then I went back to massaging Prabhupada, and the mosquito landed on his leg, and he moved it away. And he turned to me and he said, "He has attacked me. Now you can get him." I guess that's my credentials as a Kshatriya. I killed a mosquito that attacked my spiritual master. It's about the extent of my Kshatriya abilities anyway. So, anyway, we can tell more stories sometime, but... what shall I tell him? Which one? We were here in Juhu, of course, and Prabhupada had just come back from London, and he was really, as we found out, he was on his last days. And I was taking care of Prabhupada 10 at night till 5 in the morning. I would be with Prabhupada, and Tamal Krishna Maharaj had, when I came, he said, "You please take the night shift and we will take turns in the day." And Prabhupada was talking about, we were asking him to please stay and let's go to the best doctors and we have so much to do. And so much preaching, Prabhupada, and we can't do it without you. And Prabhupada was listening and listening. And so he called the leaders. There were GBCs and sannyasis in there, and he was asking what to do. And so they were begging him to stay and let's go. We can go to the best doctors in the world. And he took it under consideration. They left, and Prabhupada asked, "So, Kaladri, what do you think?" Because I had this shift. I was taking care of him then, and they left. And I said, "Srila Prabhupada, I feel like I'm an intruder into your pastimes. I have no qualification for being here. But if you ask me, it seems to me that you are in the hands of Krishna and Balaram. And whatever they decide, and until they decide, probably the best place would be Vrindavan." And Prabhupada shook his head and said yes. So he said, "Well, you ask me to put my fate in the hands of doctors. I will put my fate in the hands of Krishna and Balaram." And then shortly after that, Srinathji Prabhu, we took his car and took Prabhupada to the train, and we took him to Vrindavan. And I remember in Vrindavan, again we would pray to him, "Prabhupada, you please pray to Krishna. We're praying to Krishna to keep you with us, but you're the pure devotee. He has sent you here to spread Lord Chaitanya's mission. If you ask him to let you stay longer, surely he will." And he would say, "Okay, I'll pray." And we asked him, "Prabhupada, come to the west. Your palace will be done. You can stay at your palace in New Vrindavan and direct your mission." And Prabhupada said, "I will see what palace Krishna sends me to." So those are very difficult times. But putting our faith in Krishna, at some point, you know, we behave in a very responsible, intelligent manner, but at some point it will be, you know, put our faith in Krishna and Guru, and because at the end that's all we really have is our spiritual master and Krishna. What else, Maharaj? So, sorry. I hope I haven't embarrassed you too much being up here, Maharaj. But, thank you all for...
Thank you, Kuladi Prabhu, for this very heartwarming personal experiences you have shared with us. Maharaj, I request you to say a few thoughts. Like to speak? Maharaj is asking you to lead some kirtan. To lead kirtan.